Chapter 45. Bunched into a compact column, with the gallant little Scotch cart bouncing and jolting in the rear, Courtney's fighting scouts cantered southwards with the brown winter grass brushing their stirrups. With Saul beside him and the two Zulus ranging ahead like hunting dogs, Sean rode in the van. He slouched easily in the saddle and tried with both hands to steady Ada's letter as it fluttered in the wind of his passage. It was strange to read the gentle, reassuring words as he hurried into battle. All was well at Lioncop. The wattle grew apace, free from fire, drought, or pestilence. She had hired an assistant manager who worked afternoons only. His mornings required attendance at Ladyburg's school. Dirk was earning his princely salary of 2 shillings and 6 pence a week and seemed to be enjoying the work. The arrival of his school report for the period ended at Easter was the occasion for some concern. His average high marks for each subject were followed by the notation, could do much better, or lacks concentration. The whole was summarised by the headmaster. Dirk is a high-spirited and popular boy, but he must learn to control his temper and to apply himself with more diligence to those subjects he finds distasteful. Dirk had recently fought an epic bout of fisticuffs with the Peterson boy, who was 2 years his senior, and had emerged blooded and bruised, but victorious. Here Sean detected a note of pride in Ada's prim censure. There followed half a page of messages dictated by Dirk, in which protestations of filial love and duty were liberally punctuated with requests for a pony, a rifle, and permission to terminate his scholastic career. Ada went on tersely to say that Gary had recently returned to Ladyburg, but had not yet called upon her. Finally, she instructed him to take pains with his health, invoked the Almighty to his protection, anticipated his swift return to Lioncop, and ended with love. Sean folded the letter carefully and tucked it away. Then he let his mind drift, lolling in the saddle while the brown miles dropped steadily behind his horse. There were so many loose or ravel threads to follow. Dirk and Ada, Ruth and Saul, Garrick and Michael. And all of them made him sad. Then suddenly he glanced sideways at Saul and straightened in the saddle. This was not the time to brood. They had entered the mouth of one of the valleys that sloped upwards towards the massive snow-plastered ramparts of the Drakensberg, and were following a stream whose banks dropped 10 feet to the water that gurgled and tinkled over the polished round boulders in its bed. "How much further, Nonga?" he called.
"Close now, Inkosi."
In another valley that ran parallel to the one Sean was following, separated from it by 2 ridges of broken rock, a young Boer asked the same question. "How much further, Oompol?" But before answering, Fecht-General Jan Polis Leroux eased himself around in the saddle and looked back along the commando of 1,000 burghers he was leading to a rendezvous at his lager in the mountains. They rode in a solid mass that clogged the floor of the valley, bearded men in a motley of dark homespun clothing, on ponies shaggy in their winter coats. Yet Jan Polis felt pride swell in his chest as he looked at them. These were the bitter enders, veterans of 50 fights, men forged and tempered in the furnace of battle, razor-sharp and resilient as the finest steel. Then he looked at the boy beside him. A boy in years only, for his eyes were old and wise.
"Close now, Henny."
"Eccles, we'll halt here. Water the horses, loosen the girths, but don't off-saddle. No fires, but the men can rest and eat."
"Away all, sir."
"I'm going forward to have a look at the lager. While I'm away, I want you to issue an extra 100 rounds of ammunition to each man. Check the maxims. I should be back in 2 hours.
"When will it be, sir?"
"We'll move forward at dusk. I want to be in position to attack as soon as the moon rises. You can tell the men now."
As Sean and Nonga left the column and moved on foot up the valley, 2 men watched them from the ridge. They lay on their bellies among the rocks. Both of them were bearded. One of them wore a British officer's Sam Brown belt over his patched leather jacket, but the rifle that rested on the rock in front of him was a Mauser.
"They send spies to the lager," he whispered,
and his companion answered in the Taal.
"Yeah, they have found it. Go, ride quickly to Oompol, and say for him that we have 300 khaki ripe and ready for the plucking."
The other Boer grinned and wriggled backwards, working his way off the skyline. Once below it, he ran to his pony and led it down into the grass, which would muffle its hoofbeats before he mounted. An hour later, Sean returned from his reconnaissance. "We've got them, Eccles," he grinned savagely at Saul and Eccles. "They're about 2 miles ahead, in a hidden basin of hills." He squatted down and smoothed a patch of earth with the palm of his hand. "Now here's the way we'll do it." With a twig, he drew quickly in the dirt. "This is our valley, here we are. This is the lager, hills here and here and here. This is the entrance to the basin. Now, we'll place 2 Maxims here, with 100 men below, and in front of them like this. I want you..." Abruptly, his earthen map exploded, throwing dirt into his eyes and open mouth. "What the bloody..." he mouthed as he clawed at his face. But the rest of it was lost in the blast of the Mausers. Through streaming eyes, Sean looked up at the ridge. "Oh, my God!" A fire haze of gun smoke drifted across it like a sea spray on a windy day, and he sprang to his feet. "Into the river! Get the horses into the river!" he roared above the murderous crackle, the shrill fluting whine of ricochets, and the continuous slapping of bullets into earth and flesh. "Into the river! Get into the river!" He ran down the column, shouting at the men who were struggling to clear their rifles from the scabbards of plunging, rearing horses. The Boer fire flogged into them, dropping men and horses screaming into the grass. Loose horses scattered along the valley, reins trailing and empty stirrups bouncing against their flanks. "Leave them! Leave them go! Get into the river!" 2 of the mules were down, kicking, wounded in the traces of the Scotch cart. Sean tore the tarpaulin loose and lifted out one of the Maxims. A bullet splintered the woodwork under his hands. "You!" he shouted at one of his sailors. "Grab this!" He passed the gun to him, and the man ran with it cradled in his arms and jumped over the river bank. With a case of ammunition under each arm, Sean followed him. It seemed as though he ran waist-deep in water, each pace dragging with painful deliberation, and his fear came strongly upon him. A bullet flipped his hat forward over his eyes. The ammunition cases weighted him down, and he blundered panic-stricken towards the river. The earth was gone abruptly from under his feet, and he fell, dropping free, until with a shock that jarred his spine, he struck and toppled forward face down into the icy water. Immediately he scrambled up, and still clutching the Maxim ammunition, floundered to the steep bank. Above him the Boer fire whipped and sang, but the bed of the river was crowded with his men, and others still fell and jumped from the bank to add to the congestion. Panting and streaming water from his clothing, Sean leaned against the bank while he gathered himself. The stream of survivors into the riverbed dwindled and stopped. The Boer fire also stuttered out, and a comparative quiet fell over the field, spoiled only by the groaning and cursing of the wounded. Sean's first coherent thought was for Saul. He found him holding 2 pack mules under the bank with Nonga and Imbijani beside him, holding another pair. He sent Saul to take command at the far end of the line. "Sergeant Major!" Sean shouted, and with relief heard Eccles's reply from close at hand. "Here, sir. Spread them out along the bank. Get them to cut firing platforms." "Very good, sir." And immediately he began. "Here, you lot. You heard the Major. Up off your backsides." Within 10 minutes, there were 200 rifles lining the bank, and the Maxim was sighted and manned behind a schanze of stone and earth. Those men who had lost their weapons were tending the wounded. This pitiful little group were gathered in the middle of the line. They were propped against the bank, sitting waist-deep in slush, and their blood stained the water pinky brown. Sean climbed up to one of the firing platforms beside Eccles and lifted his head to peer cautiously over the bank. The area in front of him was a sickening sight. Dead mules and horses with their packs burst open, littering the grass with blankets and provisions, wounded animals flopping helplessly or standing quietly with their heads hanging. "Is there anyone else still out there alive?" Sean called. But the dead men gave him no answer. A sniper on the ridge ploughed a bullet into the ground in front of Sean's face, and he ducked down quickly. "Most of them managed to crawl in, sir. Those that didn't are better out there than in the mud here." "How many did we lose, Eccles?"
"About 12 dead, sir, and 2 as many wounded. We got off very lightly."
"Yes," Sean nodded. "Most of their initial fire went too high. It's a mistake even the best shots make when shooting downhill."
"Why, fair caught us with our pants down," mused Eccles,
and Sean did not miss the censure in his tone.
I know. I should have placed lookouts on the ridge, he agreed.
You're no Napoleon, he told himself, and you've got casualties to prove it.
How many of them lost their weapons? He asked.
We got 210 rifles and one Maxim, sir, and I issued an extra 100 rounds to each man just before the attack.
Oh, well, it should be enough, Sean decided. Now all that remains is to sweat it out until my native guide brings up reinforcements.
For half an hour nothing happened beyond a little desultory sniping from the ridge. Sean moved along the line, talking to the men.
How's it going, sailor?
Me old ma would have a fit, sir. George, she'd say. Sitting in the mud is not going to do your piles no good, she'd say, sir.
The man was shot through the stomach, and Sean had to force his chuckle through his throat.
I could use a smoke, though, that I could.
Sean found a damp cigar in his pocket for him and moved on. A youngster, one of the colonials, was crying silently as he held against his chest the blood-soaked bundle of bandages that was his hand.
"Giving you pain?" Sean asked gently.
The boy looked up at him, the tears smearing his cheeks.
"Go away," he whispered. "Please go away."
Sean walked on.
"I should have put lookouts on the ridge," he thought again. "I should have—" "A
flag of truce on the ridge, sir," a man shouted excitedly, and Sean clambered up beside him. Immediately a hum of comment ran along the line.
"They're hanging out there washing.
The bastards want to surrender. They know we've got them licked." Sean climbed out of the riverbed and waved his hat at the speck of white that fluttered on the ridge, and a horseman trotted down towards him.
"Medach, meneer,"
Sean greeted him. He received only a nod in reply and took the note the man proffered.
"Meneer, I expect the arrival of my Hotchkiss gun at any moment. Your position is not safe. I suggest you lay down your guns to prevent further killing. Signed, J.P. Leroux, Fechtgeneral, Weinberg Commando."
It was written on an irregular scrap of brown wrapping paper in High Dutch.
"My greetings to the General, Meneer, but we will hold out here a little longer."
"As you wish," the Boer acquiesced. "But first you must see if any of these," he pointed at the khaki figures that were scattered among the dead mules and horses,
"you must see if any of them are still alive, and you must destroy the wounded animals."
"It is kind of you, Meneer."
"You will, of course, make no attempt to pick up weapons or ammunition."
"Of course."
The Boer stayed with them while Eccles and half a dozen men searched the field, destroying the maimed animals and examining the fallen troopers. They found one man still alive. The air hissed softly from his severed windpipe, and a froth of blood bubbles writhed about the hole. On a blanket they carried him down to the riverbed.
11 dead, sir," Eccles reported to Sean. "Eccles, as soon as the truce ends, we are going to recover another Maxim and the 2 cases of ammunition."
They stood beside the Scotch cart, and Sean inclined his head to indicate the bulky, blue-metalled weapon that showed from beneath the tarpaulin.
Very good, sir."
"I want 4 men ready below the lip of the bank. Make sure each man has a knife to cut the pack ropes."
"Yes, sir."
Eccles grinned like a playful walrus and drifted back towards the river, and Sean strolled across to the mounted Boer.
"We finished, Meneer." "Goed. As soon as I cross the skyline up there, then we'll start again."
"I agree." Sean walked back to the river, picking his way through the dead. Already the flies were there, swarming green and metallic, rising like a migrating hive of bees as he passed, then settling again. Sean reached the bank, and below him Saul crouched at the head of a bunch of unarmed men. Behind them stood a very disgruntled Eccles, his moustache drooping in disappointment. Instantly Sean saw what had happened. Saul had used his superior rank to take over command of the volunteers.
"What the hell do you think you're doing?" Sean demanded,
and Saul answered him with an obstinate stare.
"You'll stay here where you are, and that's an order." He turned to Eccles. "Take over, Sergeant Major."
And Eccles grinned. This was no time to argue. Already the Boer horseman was halfway up the ridge. Sean raised his voice and shouted at the long line of men below the bank.
"Listen, all of you. No one is to fire until the enemy do. That way we may be able to spin it out a little longer."
Then, less loudly, as he spoke to Eccles,
"Don't run.
Just walk out casually.
Sean jumped down the bank and stood between Eccles and Saul. All three of them peered up at the ridge and saw the Boer reach the crest, wave his hat, and disappear.
Go,
Sean said, and all of them went. Eccles, the four volunteers, and Saul. Flabbergasted, Sean stared at the six of them as they strolled out towards the Scotch cart. Then his anger flared. The stupid little bastard. And he went also. He caught up with them as they reached the Scotch cart, and in the strained silence of the suspended storm, he growled at Saul.
I'll fix you for this.
And Saul grinned triumphantly. Still, there was a puzzled silence from the ridge, but it could not last much longer. Together, Saul and Eccles slashed at the ropes that held the tarpaulin, and Sean pulled it back and reached for the gun.
Take it.
He passed it to the man behind him. At that moment, a warning shot cracked over their heads.
Grab one each and run.
From the ridge and the river came gunfire like a long roll of drums, and they ran doubled beneath their loads and dodging back towards the river. The man carrying the Maxim fell headlong. Sean threw the ammunition case he carried. It dropped short of the bank, but skidded forward and toppled over the edge. Hardly pausing in his run, he stooped and gathered the fallen Maxim and went on. Ahead of him, first Eccles, then Saul, jumped into safety, and Sean followed them with the three surviving troopers. It was over. Sean sat waist-deep in the icy water, with the machine gun clutched to his chest, and all he could think of was his anger at Saul. He glared at him, but Saul and Eccles knelt facing each other, grinning and laughing. Sean handed the gun to the nearest trooper and crossed to Saul. His hand fell heavily on his shoulder, and he pulled him to his feet.
You!
He could not find words cutting enough. If Saul had been killed out there, Ruth would never have believed Sean had not ordered it so.
You fool,
he said, and might have hit him, but he was distracted by the cries from the firing platform beside him.
The poor bastard. He's up. Lie down, for God's sake, lie down.
Sean released Saul, jumped up onto the platform and stared through the loophole in the shans. Out in the open, the trooper who had carried the Maxim was on his feet. He was moving parallel to the bank, shambling with a curious idiot gait, his hands hanging loosely by his sides. They were shooting at him from the ridge. Held in the paralysis of horror, none of them went to him. He was hit, and he lurched, but tottered on, with the Boer rifles hunting him, staggering in a circle away from the river. Then suddenly they killed him, and he dropped onto his face. The gunfire stopped, and in the silence the men in the riverbed began to move around and talk of trivial things, avoiding each other's eyes. Ashamed to have watched such a naked, intimate thing as that man's dying. Sean's anger was gone, replaced by guilty thankfulness that it had not been Saul out there in the open.